Big thank you to the Warehouse Arts District and to this incredible Tully Levine Gallery that we're in. I love this space. I love the, they just took out the ceiling and it feels so big and open. It's like good acoustics. So it's great for a poetry reading. Thank you for being here. Thanks for participating in National Poetry Month and City of Writers, the festival that is being sponsored by the City of St. Petersburg, which is meant to bring poetry all over the city. So look out for City of Writer events year round. And this is our inaugural festival. It is my great honor to introduce Sam to you all. Before I read their bio, I just wanna say that Sam is one of the most like hardworking activists, mentors for youth, creative individuals, and just like such a like powerful creative presence to be in. And I'm so thankful for your friendship and for everything you do for our community. Sam is an internationally renowned spoken word poet, a reputed educator on intersectionality, systemic discrimination and resistance, and a local activist. A masculine performing Indian lesbian raised Hindu on her mother's side and Muslim on her father's side. Sam moved to the US in 2007, earning her second and third masters in multimedia journalism and women's and gender studies. Please join me in welcoming Sam! Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you see me?
Yes.
If I had left the mic at that height, you would not have been able to. All right, folks, thank you so much, Gloria, for that absolutely glorious introduction. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much. I'm gonna start by doing a poem for y'all, and then I'm gonna give you a little background on how this event came about. But rest assured, y'all are all in for a treat. We have some amazing humans here. We have some amazing poets here. And the next hour is going to be absolutely outstanding, and I hope you enjoy every moment of it. This poem I wrote in 2018. It is called Heartbeat. The interesting thing for me about this poem is that it was relevant when I wrote it. It still stays relevant. And the saddest part of it is I think it will continue to stay relevant, and you will see when. Some days, the most honest thing that I can do for myself is to listen to the sound of my heart beating. In the morning, right before I wake, right before reality seeps its way through to remind me of this thing called surviving, there is a brief moment before I open my eyes when the only sound I hear is a soft snore of my puppy, peaceful at the edge of my bed, and the loud, persistent comfort of my beating heart. I wonder, is this what freedom sounds like? I watch young white boys get their driver's permits like awards that celebrate the mediocrity they will shine on for the rest of their lives. Tongues carved in colonial tradition, learning only ignorance as second language, speaking of the legality of a back door while lining the gates at the front with guns aimed at black and brown children. This country is not a nation of immigrants. It is a land that was imagined on the genocide of native humans, built on the backs of enslaved people, and devised to hold the heads of minorities underwater while still forcing us to breathe. The life of an immigrant woman is not for the faint-hearted. It requires years of practice walking on eggshells around your own existence, testing the pain tolerance of your own skin, looking around your own home to see if anyone's watching when you kiss your lover, watching over your shoulder when dancing at a nightclub, hoping that you don't accidentally speak your beloved first language while at an airport. I wonder if I'll ever hear my heartbeat without trying. Perhaps this is what freedom sounds like.
Millions of hearts across the world beating harder every day. I wonder if this is why mothers of dead children cradle their heads to their chest, so the last thing their souls will hear is a steady beat of a mother's heart over the deafening sound of a racist bullet. I wonder if the founding fathers held their palms over their hearts when taking the Pledge of Allegiance to drown out the humanity of their heartbeats. I wonder if faith leaders rely on their heartbeat to give them rhythm when reciting prayer so they can drown out the sound of hate. I know that my heartbeat gets louder with every line of this poem because my word is my everything. I know that an activist speaks from their heart no matter how afraid their mind is. I know that no wall will ever keep our community away from us as long as our hearts are beating. I wonder if freedom will ever be our first language. I know this fight won't end in my lifetime. This legacy has outgrown its roots. But decades from now, when this country elects to its highest office a queer, transgender, hijabi Muslim woman of color who came to this country undocumented, ran her whole campaign on her history of being a sex worker, partnered with a gender nonconforming woman of color who raises pit bulls as children, I know then we will hear the future of their heartbeats beating loud and clear, sounding well over the history of white supremacist patriarchy, and none of us will ever forget where we came from. We are living in some very hard times right now. Unfortunately, I think 10 years ago, the people standing up at this mic probably would have said the same thing, because we were living in some very hard times back then too. I don't know at what time any human who belongs to a marginalized community could look back and said, those were the good old days, right? We don't necessarily have that. Here comes a woke word, privilege, do we? So one of the reasons, I told you I'll give you a little background on this event. Gloria and I got together, like we often do, at a coffee shop to jam and brainstorm and come up with some ideas, you know. And when the poet laureate of St. Pete asked to brainstorm with you, you say yes very quickly, right? Also because it's Gloria, you say yes very quickly. And so we're sitting together and we're just talking about, you know, the people that we know and how nice it would have to be to have so many poetry comings together and so on and so forth. And Gloria mentioned a few people here and there, and I mentioned a few poets that I knew here and there. And I made the connection, and, you know, we thought, oh my God, these are Asian American poets. These are Asian poets, these are Asian American poets. These are Asian American Pacific Islander poets. Did we just mention at least five of them? That's freaking awesome. Are they all right here in Florida? Why are they here in Florida? But thank you for being here in Florida, right? And I've been doing poetry since 2012. The folks who have been doing poetry for way longer than that. And I have never actually seen in my home in the Tampa Bay area an Asian American Pacific Islander poetry night. You know, we see a lot of different, we see LGBTQ plus poetry, we see black poetry, we see Hispanic poetry, but you don't see AAPI poetry nights, you know. And one of the things that I have learned from working with young humans is if a space does not exist for you, create it. Right? Don't bring a chair to the table. Create the damn table yourself. They don't want you at it. It was never for you to begin with. Right? And so we said, let's do this. I heard this was going to be on radio, so I'm behaving myself, okay? Right? So we said, let's do this. We reached out to these incredible humans. They said, let's go. We said, who are we to stop this from happening? And so by the power of the universe, here we are on this fine evening celebrating AAPI poetry, right? Put your hands together. Bravo for being here. This is an amazing space to be in. Over the next hour, like I promised you, we have some amazing poets. Let me find another adjective. Some wonderful poets coming up to this mic to grace this stage. And with that, I'm going to bring up our next poet. Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready? Can you sound like you're ready? Are y'all ready? What up? Okay, let's go. Hey. So our next poet for the evening is none other than Yuki Jackson. Yuki Jackson is... Correct reaction. Yuki Jackson is a black and Japanese poet and educator. Her poetry has been published in literary journals such as Four Way Review and Cream City Review, for which she was nominated for a 2021 Best of the Net Award and the 2020 Summer Poetry Prize. Yuki's writing and text-based art has also been featured by NPR Next Gen, Spady Cultural Heritage Museum, and the Goodwin Proctor Law Firm. Her work as an arts educator includes being the founder of The Battleground, a youth program serving a historically marginalized community in Tampa, Florida. She is also a co-founder of the Florida Local Artists and Writers Network. For more on her work, please check out yukijackson.com. Please clap it up for Yuki Jackson coming up to the stage.
I am the one who brought the great flood of warriors onto your shore. Roaring, majestic life from the motherland. Hear that rumble. Our gale force winds have broke the chains. See it all come rushing as change. So fast, best believe that's whiplash on behalf of the ancestors. In fact, we are them. You see, the energy stored from all the injustice we bore only passed on. Isn't bending blood just like bending water? The avatar of God, call me Katara. Truth is, we began at the bottom, in that space so dark and deep we couldn't be seen. The only light down here is produced from our own heads, projected in third eye position. It is here where pressure is most profound, where we make our way through the rhythm of sound, manifesting waves from our vibration. This is what it means to see deeply, that bass throbbing as pulse, that begin tsunami, born from the underground, that place closest to the core, creating waves as crescendo, following lines that lead us to the peak above that mountain in the distance. You know energy travels as spirals, winding up like a cork about to pop the top off this bottle, shaking up this blood we drink to form our sanctity. Isn't it once there was no word for the color blue, so we called the sea blood. Like the stream lay the beat upon, with enough room to lay our verses and move the masses, even before we perform. This means the mass we gained has been invisible, but it's been stacking up. All this pressure, all this attempt to hold us down has only made us stronger. No, we are not woke. We are awake, as in awake. As in those ocean waves created when a vessel moves through a medium, as in the medium cannot be compressed. As in this wake cannot be suppressed. As in the wake when we gather to pay respects to the dead with their body present. I am that body who gave all this labor. What light through yonder water breaks? This is the real genesis, meaning these are the generations, a generator cord pumping through these children, AKA warriors. Best believe these MCs came out by the dozen. You can't fade the mother of all creation, the original, the source. Follow me and you'll find your birth. To return to that side we lost, making us complete in this narrative of human history. We are the evolution, the new branch in the story. But in order to understand life, you must reckon with your birth. Even Hokusai couldn't imagine what was coming. Born as arsenal to seal our fate, best believe I came to slay. And here I will deliver the ark, not as in a ship to escape, as in we are the great flood. Like the ark in my arm raised as they bow to my power. I am the great wave off Kanagawa. I'm atomic, I'm nuclear, and now we're in the delivery room. You want to know how the universe began? One word, boom. Thank you. So this next poem is not so much a poem as a verse. and so I call it a universe, or one verse, a universe for the rapper sattvas of the earth. I make flipping the script literal, my literary testimony showing the other side of the spiritual mirror, connected at all times to my partner, who's better known as your savior, But no, I'm not him reincarnated. I'm the B-side to this track record of his story, the wife version, formerly known as the Holy Virgin. Here to expose plot holes where the original seeds were planted. Like how Lil' Kim rose up from under the stage with her legs open. Rap knew me best when they assigned me female dog, but since this world is backwards, it's actually female God. And yes, what goes around comes around. We've arrived at that long-sought return to the origin we've been chasing. And now we're in the reckoning. Here I am, and it turns out karma really is a bitch. Thank you. And so for my last poem, this is dedicated to being in Florida. Yeah, right? It's loaded, right? It's already loaded. So that's all I'm going to say. There's a lot there, right? So, and for our shared history and, you know, as an effort for how all of us could move forward together the right way. It's called Sunshine State of Life. The battleground was birthed from a series of gunshots and love. You see, sometimes what's bad is good, although it seems like it's only worse. But inside a black hole is the only way we can create the sun. And isn't this what we're known for? Our nickname when we're not known for being a joke and oppressing people, being the first colony in the States saying falsely that it was discovered when there were already inhabitants? A vain search to find this youthful fountain, some man named after a lion who ran off the natives living on the land, showed up to take their place instead of learn from them. So I say, I want to change this narrative. Showing up in a space not to take over, but to exchange enlightenment. Like the juice that grew from the field as fruits that we may hold in our palms, like a grenade until it's time to pull the pin. And so I put my pen to these words so that we can understand what we have to do to move forward. To connect with our inner self. To understand that while searching for paradise above or beyond in a foreign land, we need to first search inside our own hearts to find the Savior. We might just have to look into the mirror and see what reflects back. An imperfect being, someone we can only witness the flaws of, something we can only see as having sinned, and so we put it down. We can't imagine how something so unholy can have so many holes that we can plant seeds in to make grow into a field of flowers like this land we love and hate called Florida, Spanish for land of flowers. And now it's time for us to bloom. Thank you.
Yuki Jackson, y'all. That was incredible. Oh my God, that first poem, especially. Yeah. Woo, that was boom indeed. Boom indeed. Okay, I got a quick question for our audience here. Can I get like one, two, maybe three answers? What is y'all's favorite food? Just raise your hand or shout it out. I will volunteer you. What's your favorite food? Sushi? Barbecue, sushi, can I get one more? Ramen. I got pizza back there too. Okay, four great answers, fantastic. When you have had a long day and you're super hungry, right? And let's say magically, ramen, sushi, pizza, and barbecue appear in front of you respectfully. As you eat them, potentially, what is the sound that you would likely make? Across cultures, that is just the truth. Okay, the sound that you make comes deep from your diaphragm. You go, mmm. The one thing that I can tell you for a fact that poets respond to is you resonating and connecting with them on all that ramen, barbecue, pizza, and sushi that they serve you up every time they come to this mic. So if y'all resonate with a particular line or a particular sentiment that a poet is delivering while they're up on the stage, feel free to snap it up, right? Feel free to use your feet and stomp. We got some great chairs there that, you know, have a lot of deflection on them. So feel free to tap on that, right? Not on the mic, just on your chairs, right? If you have keychains are a great way to let people know we're listening, but we don't want to interrupt you either. But what you said really resonated. And if you have none of that accessible to you, just go, That line though, that was a good line. I felt that one. Felt it in my heart, fam. Felt it in my gut. Right? Let them know. Let your poets know that you like what they're spinning. All right. With that, now that you have received adequate instructions on how to respond, all right, we will move on to our next incredible poet. This poet, all the poets here today have a special place in my heart, but this poet particularly has a very special place in my heart because I met them as a young human, and now they're a thriving, flourishing poet, and I'm so happy that I'm able to share the stage with them. Alexis Stoffer was adopted from China when she was 2. She is now 21 years old and has been writing poetry for almost 5 years. Poetry began as an outlet for her, and it's transformed into a way for her to share her story. Please welcome to the stage, Alexis Stoffer.
How are you all tonight? You're good? Thank you so much for coming tonight. I am logging into my phone. Okay. Here we go. So as Sam wonderfully said, I am adopted from China. I was adopted around 2.5, 3 years old by my lovely mother right there. And I have nothing but good words to say about her, and this poem is dedicated to her. Thank you for being proud of me. From the uncertainty through school to holding my beating heart, you always managed to keep me smiling. Even when the thunder got too loud at times, and even when my nightmares persisted, I knew I could call you my mom. I didn't know where my life would take me, I just knew it would be painful. You saw me when I was just 3 years old, crying and scared to leave my country. Now I'm 21 and I'm reading poetry as a way to heal my history. No matter how far away I feel from China, I know how close I am to family. The universe may have dealt me a crappy hand, but I'm learning to understand that connection goes way beyond goodnight kisses and keeping the porch light on. Thank you for giving me an ear when I broke up with my first girlfriend. Ouch. Thank you for not giving up, treatment center after treatment center. When I think about safety, I can remember you defining it. Instead of providing me with a dictionary, you showed me with your own humility. And even though our family is small, I know the love you had spanned beyond infinity. Thank you for teaching me to be proud of my identity, no matter how authentic and at times challenging it may be. So this one is kind of about unrequited love. Is that how you say it? Unrequited? titled, I Love This Girl Once. I loved this girl once, and she didn't love me back. Well, not in the way that I wanted, at least. It's strange. Being someone who loves too deeply for her own good, nothing good ever came from being the chaser when all she could handle was straight liquor. Yeah. I'm 21 now, I promise. Okay, I'm gonna try and slow things down a bit. This next poem is a letter to younger me. 17 was a really hard age, and for anyone who knew me, thank you for being there for me. And this is a letter to 17. I just wanted to let you know, trigger warning, this talks about sexual assault. A letter to 17. I'm sorry I failed to protect you. Everyone has their own version of what happened, and none of it is true. I'm sorry people are so mean. I'm sorry he touched you. I'm sorry nobody asked how you felt. When you go to therapy, do you tell her everything? Do you show her every scar embedded into your memories? I know it's hard. I know you don't want to reveal the wounds that he created. It's not fair how he asked about manners and then showed you the opposite. Your smile had nothing to do with how his hands moved that night. Your body may have an imprint, but it will not stain. Your skin is too beautiful to carry every word he spoke, every poem you wrote after September 17th. His whispers should hopefully fade from the back of your mind. The smell of his jacket will no longer burn. I know my job was to protect you. My job was to foster your laughter and turn it into a song. I'm sorry the melody got lost, and I'm sorry the chords sound wrong. I'm working hard on rebuilding your self-esteem. I'm rewriting history, one that will never mention rape or guilt or misery. This last poem is kind of a testament to how I grew up. I'm Asian, and I went to a school predominantly filled with the majority, which is white children. So this is kind of just my experience as somebody who went to school. Titled, You Are Safe Now. I knew I was different when the teacher introduced me to the class. She smiled at me and asked if I could share my story. Was I that different? Could everyone see the melanin seeping into my skin? I tried my best to blend in. I tried explaining that my family is loving. Instead of hearing a happy ending, they saw me as an oddity. I can still feel everyone's eyes staring at me. I'm still that 7-year-old explaining why she only has one mom. You are safe now. You tell me that my story is worth sharing, how I'm too many miles from any orphanage to feel anything but happy. I learned early on that my skin defined me, that the shape of my eyes deserved to be laughed at. I tried telling an adult what was happening. All she told me was, you are safe now. Who's going to protect me from the bullies with teeth as white as their pride? Who's going to be there when they joke about how much I cost? I didn't know my story was different. I knew something was off. I just didn't know I was the problem. You are safe now. No matter how many times 7-year-old Alexa repeats this, the world has proven to me that it's anything but safe. Those same men with white teeth sunk them deep into my skin. They ripped apart every unique thing about me. Every time I look down at my scars, I see failed attempts to sharing my poetry. As I tell you my story, all I can see is blood dripping. You are safe now. Why do people do mean things? You are safe now. Can I just go to sleep? You are safe now. I want to go home. You are safe now. Where is home? Thank you.
Keep it going, keep it going. Clap it up for Alexa, y'all. Thank you so much, Alexa. That was some incredibly authentic, vulnerable work, and you've definitely got everyone in their fields now. Audience, great job responding. Y'all take lessons very well. I'm so proud of everybody here. Nobody likes being spoken to like that, Sam. Stop being condescending. My apologies. I was just in New College, Florida today. You know, y'all know everything that's happening with New College, Florida, right? There is someone here who could probably tell us way more about it than I can, but they had a Board of Trustees meeting today, and one of the things that a lot of the speakers were, you know, New College, Florida students, alum, teachers, faculty and administration, a lot of the faculty were there saying, we're having a Board of Trustees meeting today, there's a lot of folks coming already to give public comment, if y'all want to join, y'all should, because the likelihood that many of our tenure will be denied today is very high. They had an amazing rally, but I was very impressed, surprised at how they kept their spirits, their fighting spirit up when they knew what was going to happen, you know? So it's pretty amazing. The human spirit is incredibly resilient. It should not have to be. That should never be the goal, right? Especially with young humans, college age and school age young humans. We always tell our children, children are so resilient. We love using that line. Kids are so resilient. Like it's the goal, but it should never have to be the goal, right? We should want our kids to never have to be strong, never have to be courageous, never have to do any of the things that they are required to do now. Our next poet coming up is Avni Vyas. She's the author of Little God and chapbooks Far From a Glorious Feeling and co-author of Candy in Our Brains. I want to read that book just because of its title. Her poetry and nonfiction can be found in journals such as Grist, Meridian, Arts and Letters, and others. She serves as a poetry editor at The Offering Adam. She teaches writing at New College, Florida. Welcome to the stage, Avni Vyas. You are recording. Yeah. So, okay. So, is this all right?
Yeah.
You can hear me okay? All right. Then I'll try to just keep my movements in this frame. Thank you so much, Sam, for mentioning New College of Florida. We're going through a big moment right now. So, I will say it means so much to be spending time with people invested in poetry. We could be doing, like, petty crimes, but we decided... you know? But we decided... that like we I mean let's talk after but being here in the spirit of community and language and creativity and sharing, that to me is such a gift. So thank you so much for having me, Gloria, Sam. Thank you so much for organizing this, poets. It's an honor to be here with you. Thank you. We need it. We take it. Yes. And when students, or when people ask, like, what's happening at New College, you know, it's, our students are diamonds. This is like, the pressure is there. They know pressure. We're a storm-shaped people. We are here. We have not gone anywhere. We are not going anywhere. We are diasporic spores, right? We are here. We have rooted. We are blooming. So thank you, Yuki, for planting that image in my head. Now I'm moving forward with fortitude. I would like to share a couple things with y'all. One is a recent poem. So I'm going to share unpublished new poems with y'all in the spirit of process, in the moment. Here we are. So I'll read Phone Calls from the Other Side first, and then I'm going to tell you about this project in a moment. Phone Calls from the Other Side was written in collaboration with painter Lisa DeFranza, who... began this incredible process of creating a painting a day during COVID lockdown. And as part of a larger gallery show, created a response painting to a Grecian piece of pottery. And then said, you know, this painting, this collaboration is not complete. We need a poet. So I got to work with Lisa. I got to think about her vision as well as mine. And we did this really cool thing where my poem, her painting, connected to this third century Greek piece of pottery. So what was it that this was like this artistic lineage spanning centuries? And what does it mean to write with a piece of antiquity in mind? What do I, as a person right here, right now, have to say about the ancients? So of course, I turned to Sappho, like you do. Sappho is an inspiration, but also like a lodestar and kind of a beacon. And what we have left of Sappho are fragments. And that's kind of chilling, but also incredibly generative and generous. So what we have of Sappho is still a really fertile reminder of what language, imagination, and heart can do. So this poem is in conversation with a painting as well as Sappho. And I don't mean to think highly of myself, but I happen to, and you're welcome to as well. And I also think highly of you. You're also very pretty, all of you.
So this is called Phone Calls from the Other Side. Yuki's looking at me like you don't mean that. I do mean it. Phone Calls from the Other Side. Sometimes a stranger will come along and call you baby, and suddenly it is an October evening at sunset full of bullfrogs stitching a robe from their song. Sometimes I believe they are channeling the dead, whose mating cries are supple enough to coat the webbing of your fingers. And I think of Sappho's line, someone in some future time will think of us. And how I'm always in the past and trying to slip out of it, out of time altogether, scanning the radio dial for you. But commingling our dust, we all sound alike in the end. Smash together all the vowels from all the countries you know, and it comes out a whale. Sappho, the past is large enough for all of us and the animals we have been. I think of the panther Dionysus rides slinking along Greek stoneware, all pleasure and muscle, and ask, is anger the last pure joy I've saved for myself? I mistake its heat for the weather. When my son screams like fabric tearing, I am his galaxy in flux. His face is a collapse of time and genetics, wearing a dozen grandparents across his forehead. Their message is clear. You'll have to be stronger than whatever this is to keep going. They who packed their families on the last steamer out of port, who traveled jungles alone by foot, the first of their lines to reach for a horse and heal its infected hawk. As children, I could feel my brother's sobs through the night and hold them in my own lungs. The bravest thing I've ever done is keep the clay pot of my body intact. Breaking open and stretching open are almost the same thing. Watch the panther drop her jaw, arc her ribs into a question mark without an answer. Note the give she gives herself. Hinges and spines may crack, but flesh oozes free. The ancients believed our sexes were determined by our body heat, and whoever we became aside from that was our calling. Imagine knowing yourself as a temperature and dressing for it, onioning your body in delicious layers like a burrata of steam and salt, the way a sky will hold bits of its richest thunderheads over a bright beach day. It's hard to see straight without my glasses. But a good heartbreak will sharpen the edges. I remind myself that if I feel like a walking knife blade, it's not because my severity is exacting, but that we all live for a while as weapons, and rarely do we know it. Rarely do we know anything the moment it's happening, unless it's the crisp break of an apple's shoulder in our mouth, a generous magnolia spread wide as an unmade bed. How juicy to savor hope just for yourself. Before my son, a man I loved, convinced me we had what we earned, but I earned by scavenging, so I plumbed between seat cushions for change. I spent my birthday cash on the power bill. So small, the dead jeer from their stadium seats. Have a pastry once in a while. When a woman leaves you for a possibility instead of a person, she's begun feeding herself again. You heard that. A cheese Danish after a bad fight tastes even better when you're mad, like voyeuristic lovemaking and throwing daggers at your own reflection, like eat your heart out. But who am I addressing? Of course the dead want me good and mad. Suds build with friction and froth scuds richly. The dead are in cahoots with it all, even God, like the story of the clay pot that never went empty, always full of vin, and if you didn't want it, the plain sour curd would fill and fill to share and share. The dead get a kick out of my dairy aversion, as well as the blush I sport when the hot neighbors want to be our friends. My shoulders form a question mark against the sky. A slash of gooey orange smears over our roofs. Baby pineapples sprout out of a spike plant. Dear Sappho, I'm holding you in this memory. The last time I went skinny dipping, the night opened up its darkness and I dove into her mouth where I could hear you rushing in my ears, our vowels pressed together in a blood pulse hymn. Thank you. Sometimes I feel like I get into poem mode, and then when I hop out, it's like watching a Muppet try to recalibrate. I'm sorry, that's just my vibe, that's who I am. Let me tell you about these cards. I decided that for my poetry practice, which I'm always kind of in conversation with and always trying to like flex and stretch and explore in new ways, I decided that instead of writing a lot, which is generally how I get to the poem that I want to write, I would try the opposite. I would try to distill language. So for the past 50 days, I have been writing an intention and a haiku, and that's where my writing practice will start every day. So that's something that I've been able to manage and keep up, and I took 45 of them and I put them on these index cards, or these playing cards, and this deck is going to a friend, new college faculty member, who's an incredibly gifted tarot reader and astrologer. But what I thought I would do, in the spirit of cards, card making, and poems that don't really stay fixed on a page, what the haiku process really taught me is when you're distilling language, sometimes you don't, it feels like a crime to leave a poem on a screen or a piece of paper, you know, you want to feel it, you want to move it around. And these poems, they don't want to be mine. They want to wriggle out of me, and they want to find you. So, with that in mind, can I have a couple of volunteers draw some cards? Yeah!
Cool. Okay, your right side.
So what I'll do is I'll read three, and then readers, if y'all will go one, two, three, if that's okay. All right, so I'm just going to also pick three, and we'll go from there. These were composed like one a day. So in the last 50 days, what's happened? My son learned how to say no more, like really say it. I paid a lot of attention to the live oak outside my writing window. My cat forgot how to use the litter box. My grandfather passed away. My school is under a hostile takeover. Like, the world is happening at an enormous rate, and poetry is happening alongside it. So some of these poems are personal, and some of these are just kind of, I'm sorry if they don't make any sense, but here we go. Okay, this one is Airborne. I hold lost pregnancies in the white grief and red rage of clouds. Here's a second one. You keep a jello mold around for these Sundays. Three babes, a soundtrack, red tide air. The oak and the acorn know the same language of time and light and growth. Okay. Hmm. All right, volunteers, your turn. You want to come up? You can, or if. And if you prefer to not read it, that's okay. All right. Okay.
Thank you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I thought poems might cure my venom. Instead, they ate through my armor.
Muscular reminder, spring break should last 14 weeks plus 39 more.
Hi. Dissolve an old self, unlatch your back gate, and let the coyotes in.
Clap it up, clap it up. Thank you so much, Avni Vyas. That was incredible. All right, fam, so typically after a poetry show, you know, some folks get together and go out for a drink, perhaps go out for a meal. At this poetry show, we do something really special, and it was suggested by Avni Vyas. We go out and commit petty crimes. Think about it. We're going to hand out note cards at the end of the event. We're going to need suggestions, right? And don't put your name on it. All right. Our last, but most certainly not the least poet, is Ryan Cheng. Ryan Cheng is a poet from Northern California. He holds an MFA from the University of South Florida. He has been awarded AWP's Intro Journalist Project Award for Poetry, the Betty Newman Poetry Award, and first place in USF's Humanities Institute Annual Poetry Contest, judged by, tell me if I pronounce this wrong, Yori Graham? Just like it was? Judged by Jory Graham. His poems have appeared in Quarterly West, Sweet, The Ignatian, and elsewhere. He currently lives in Tampa, Florida, where he teaches both professional and technical writing and creative writing courses at USF. Please welcome to the stage, Ryan Cheng.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Gloria. Thank you, Warehouse Arts District. Thank you, readers and listeners as well. I have three poems for you today. The last two are really inspired by my daughter, who's 3 and a half now. So you'll see some nice father-daughter poems, sort of, I guess. So the first poem is titled Take It Up with Edison. Edison referring to sort of Thomas Edison, who we can thank for all this sort of electrical distribution of illumination here. So Take It Up with Edison. Beneath the cloud-clotted sky, the wind tunes the trees. Palm fronds sheathe and unsheathe among a choir of shushing librarians, swaying in the live oaks. Palms pirouette faster and then even faster. Is that a bomb falling or a howling dog? The threadbare light giving way. Between the palms, sunlight's been picked clean. An eclipse of moths mob the porch light. These bowl-bound moths, blessed by a windfall of double-edged moons, leave bits and pieces of themselves on the bulb. When man first rocketed to the moon, what bits and pieces were left behind? The second poem is called The Light Perceived by Birds. And it's kind of inspired by when you get your child down for their nap or for their bedtime, really just hoping that sort of sticks. So this one, a neighbor has a spotlight and it's keeping sort of things, keeping animals, wildlife awake. So the light perceived by birds. A bird chirrups outside my window. It fills a neighbor's spotlight with birdsong, trilling against a backdrop of bark. My daughter, nearly asleep. To break the bird is out of the question. After all, isn't it the light? Isn't it the light incandescent that beckons a premature dawn chorus? The bird bores the night with its beak. Each pore decants the dead weight of darkness. To leave the bed might make them more awake. An open window and a nightstand paperweight, an open invitation. But wait. It only takes one missed throw to rip open the star-pocked sky and jailbreak that light. And the final poem kind of deals with the same thing, trying to be really sort of trying to protect her from waking up. And of course, you know, if that's my only concern now, I've got a whole lot ahead of me, so. This one's called Concerning Light, and there's an epigraph from a novel, Leave the World Behind, by Rumen Alam. And that quote is, parenthood was never knowing what was going to hurt your kids, but knowing only that something inevitably would. So Concerning Light. I blame my lack of writing on being a new father, but after 2 years, I finally looked up and realized they just don't make clouds like they used to. Or is it the light that's changed? Under the same sky, I cradle her baby monitor and listen to my daughter's night Naptime Incantation, Papa, Mama, Daisy, Dooney. Her universe unbridled and unbruised. How do I stop my daughter from getting older? The world unshackles itself at nap time. Blue jays jeer among the live oaks. Two chihuahuas riot down the street. Light slinks through the blinds and trespasses across her face. I am the enemy of light and always outrun. Forgive me, daughter, I am no match. You got me again, light, scattering like you're wont to do. Clouds clang, a new shade of white, and still, there's far too much light and never enough. Thank you.
Clap it up for Ryan Chang, fam, closing out the poetry section of our evening. At this point, I'm going to invite all of our poets of the evening to please come up on stage and grab a seat. This is the conversation part of our evening, where I will function as the moderator and ask our folks a few questions, following which we will throw it over to the audience. So if you have any burning questions for all or one of our poets, feel free to ask them during that time. All right, folks, I'm going to hand this mic over to y'all, right? Because we're recording over there.
So like I mentioned earlier, we don't normally have Asian American programs, right? We don't normally have something specific to this identity of the poetry community. And so my first question is going to be super generic. We've heard it asked at every other panel discussion. But since groups like us now get particularly come together, I think it's relevant for us to answer even what seems like more common questions, right? So with that, just a quick question. Couple of sentences, you could let us know what motivates your writing.
So for me personally, I think life experiences and personally struggles motivates the words that come through. I find a lot of solace actually in those words, even though in my head I can't exactly make out what I want to say, my hands will still write something, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I know for me, what motivates me is nonsense, right? For both good and bad. So yeah, just things that, you know, don't make sense, you know, too, whether it's personal or within society, just it's, you know, I write poetry as an attempt to make sense of things. So yeah, it's mine.
Mine's very similar to Yuki's as well. I think trying to make sense of things and in a lot of ways sort of diary keeping, but in a way that allows me to read it and experience it in you know, new ways and in old ways.
I thought the question was going to be about who we were wearing, just like, I was like, Ross Dress for Less. I'm wearing Ross Dress for Less. my short answer is paper never interrupts. So finding solace on the page, I think, echoes shared sentiments. But also, I don't know if this is true for y'all, but I need a place to be able to make mistakes safely, and paper affords a lot of room for that. Yeah, that's my answer.
Also, fairly generic question, but I am wanting to know because the audience participation activity that you did, right, with the cards that you created, your intentional writing, so on and so forth, I understand that activity is one of your processes, right? What are some of your processes when you write?
My first book that came out a few years ago was written with both of my hands. So my dominant hand and my non-dominant hand. And I would alternate every day. And it was a bizarre process. It was a really humbling process because I had taken for granted word generation. But literally making words with your hands. So Alexa, I'm thinking of what you were saying about how your hands will keep going. That was a way to, like, I always want to jar myself back toward language. And so because language is around us in everything we think and do and speak and say, and we're so infiltrated by it, a lot of times what I need to do is find a process that will create an artificial barrier so that I return to my love of language. And sometimes that means making other parts of my body work a little bit differently, if that makes sense.
I think it varies from time to time, but for the most part, I try to, for lack of a better word, follow the music, and if it's not catching my ear right away, because I like to, when I write, I like to write out loud and then say it out loud, and if it's not catching my ear right away, I typically try to keep on searching for another image or another way to sonically charge the line with some sort of music.
Yeah, this is a hard question, because I don't really have one. Yeah, so I think it's to listen is all I can say is, I feel like it always, to me, the process of writing feels like a collaboration, even though I'm by myself often when I'm doing it, but I feel like I'm doing it with somebody else, if that makes sense, or maybe it's with the collective, or I don't know, or maybe there's something or someone that I'm connected to at that particular time. So I feel like, yeah, it's just sort of like the practice of listening to when a poem wants to be written and then sort of obeying that. So,
kind of going off of what Yuki just said, what I like to do personally is I don't start with the title. I feel like that's the most, I guess, daunting part. I normally come up with a line in my head or a line that sounds really good to me and it just sticks with me. So I write that, I do a full body scan, or not in therapy, and I just see where it goes.
This may or may not be relevant to the folks, right? But given, we've mentioned that we look forward to many times, and we've mentioned that apartment sends out a lot of nonsense quite often, so I'm inclined to ask, how does the political climate affect your writing role?
For me, writing has always been personal. It's a reflection of how I feel, not only inside, but how I feel about those things that are happening around me. And right now, I just can't help but feel sad. So I feel like that's being channeled a lot into my poetry, is just the vulnerability, me pouring my heart out and just being like, why are we like this? So it's very hard, like I said, to put into words about what's going on. I definitely wish we could move, and hopefully I will. But right now, just trying to do what I can to get my voice out there.
Yeah, I feel similarly. And for me, it's a huge influence or impact of what's going on externally. I feel like especially as a poet, a part of it, I kind of liken to being an open nerve ending, walking around the world, which can be... which can be challenging, right? Because it's like absorbing, things and very easily and sort of distilling it. And so, yeah, so I always feel very connected to the whole. But I think in the positive way too, I'm channeling it or, allowing myself to be a channel or a medium. And then I also increasingly am seeing poetry as the cross, or as an intersection between like life and death and past, present, and future, and just that kind of midpoint, between things. And so I think there's an opportunity there to speak to the present, but then by doing that, then speaking for the past and to the future. And I love that, you know, poetry allows a non-linear space to be able to investigate that through language. And so, yes, yeah, so I feel like it comes out in that way for me.
That was a really great answer. So in a lot of ways, I think a lot of my poems aren't necessarily explicitly political, but obviously like the political landscape we're looking at, and having a daughter especially too, I think it does bring up a lot of questions that I'm really beginning to wrestle now with more than ever, and really trying to, you know, just wrap my hand around everything. And, you know, like everyone else was kind of saying, we're looking to maybe, you know, move sooner than later, and, you know, we'll see, you know, where we go from there.
I think I've been in Florida since I was 5 years old, so I'm a product of Floridian public schools and universities and scholarships and audiences. I was telling Alexa, I got my first taste of what poetry could be 20 years ago when I discovered an off-site open mic poetry reading that would meet once a week in Gainesville, Florida, at the Civic Media Center. It's still ongoing. So in many ways, the political landscape is wild, but it's Florida that's made me a poet. And so I have this, like, real, my husband says, you know, we love Florida, it doesn't always love us back. And, you know, Florida isn't necessarily supposed to love us back, right? So I'm trying to think about Florida as a wild entity in a way that kind of lets me be a poet. And Audre Lorde writes that poetry is not a luxury. And poems are essential to our humanity. And I think as a counterpoint or an undercurrent, or, you know, to use Yuki's metaphor of the wave, I think there's something really important about poets speaking humanity into ourselves, into a moment, and to each other, because we are bigger than politics. Our capacity to grow and build and love one another is bigger than a moment, and I think that's the resonance that we get to tap into as poets, and that we get to share in these events as readings. So, yeah, I don't like what's happening at all. But I promise my heart is here, and it is beating with your hearts too.
So I started writing around 2018, and I started physically handwriting it, but my process got so intense at times that I would either break the pencil or ruin the paper, so I was just like, maybe I should turn this to electronics. And I've been using an app that's kind of like Instagram, but for writers, and I've been doing that for the past 4 years. And all of my stuff is on my computer as well as on my phone, so I can take it and share it with wherever I am.
Does it feel the same though? Like, is there a difference between, like,
having a tangible object in writing definitely channels a different feeling, but I wouldn't say it's less or greater than.
Okay.
For me, it really depends on my emotions at the time, not just what I'm holding.
The question of, like, tangible and form is a real interesting one, because I did return back to handwriting recently when I was alternating my hands to compose. And so that was humbling, but it wouldn't have happened without a lot of access to technology, like being able to scan, you know, using my phone, being able to organize. So there's this great definition of genius, right? So, like, before we were using genius the way we use it now, a genius was like a genie. They share an etymology. So when inspiration would strike, it was thought that, like, you were embodying a spirit, and you don't waste that moment, right? So whatever you've got becomes your material. And I feel so bad for my husband, because often it's conversation and he's stuck. So I'm like, I'm sorry, the genius is in me. And he's like, that's not real, you need to stop saying that. but usually it's like anything I can get my hands on.
kind of like the same with everyone. First, I think it starts here, and if I think it's worthwhile, it goes into here, and then it goes into the computer. But probably in large part, mainly computer.
I would say to just for like practical purpose, like I'm just like, I've been doing voice notes. Yeah, so like when I'm driving or if I'm, you know what I mean? It's just like it's just the quickest way to get down thoughts that are occurring to me. So, and then, yeah, the voice notes goes into text, right? So that's been mostly, but if I have, when I sit down to do intentional writing, that's when I prefer like a paper and pen. And there is something about that tactile nature of it that it feels like it does garner something more intimate. I don't know, for me personally, but yeah.
Oh, I just have a question about craft. So, like, what is something about craft that's really exciting you right now? Like, is it library, or like, what is in this moment exciting you about your writing?
For me personally, I think one of my favorite and one of the things that keeps me going back to writing is just discovering new words. I am in my second year in college right now, and it is just word explosion. So I'm just getting all I can, learning everything. I feel like I'm taking the SATs again when I come up with a new word. And yeah, the thesaurus is my best friend. So personally, I just kind of like what Avni said, something just about the etymology and the science behind what words mean.
That's a good question. Did you say a limerick?
No.
Okay. I don't know where I got limerick from. Like, this is that point in the evening. A line break. Like, I thought you were like, yeah, do you have a craft advice, like a limerick? Like, is Tyler doing limericks right now? Anyway, sorry. I know this. I was like, wow, a limerick. Yeah, do I have a limerick in me? Yeah, so I've been freestyling. So I teach too, and so I've been utilizing freestyling or like kind of stream of consciousness kind of writing, or you know, whether verbally or on paper or you know in voice notes. And so yeah, I've been just kind of really practicing the stream of consciousness, and you know, that I really love in hip hop lyricism and freestyling how then. It's just, it literally requires you to sort of surrender to yourself and to what's around you. And it kind of challenges you to be open and unlocks consciousness. And then, you know, the goal of like connecting disparate things that seem like they have no connection in the room, but how all the paintings in the room tie together with the thing, you know, like how it then, you know, and then the thing sort of starts capturing the rhythm. So yeah, whether, you know, I'm not, you know, like a rapper, obviously, but like, yeah, so I'm finding that as an exercise mentally is garnering more connective thread in my writing. And especially I know for me with, you know, different experiences I've gone through and such, like I noticed before in poetry with my voice was very disconnected or sort of, you know, disparate, or I couldn't connect to myself. And so freestyling is helping me as a technique to like connect to myself and things in my writing.
So line breaks are always awesome, always a fan of line breaks, but I think more recently it's probably thinking more about sound work or sonic texture and thinking about specific vowels, consonants. You have liquids like R's and L's, you have plosives like B's and P's, and just thinking about the obstruction of the unobstruction of air and moving through your lungs. I think it was Shakespeare who said reading poetry is like an act of possession. So I try to think about how the air, like all vowels are unobstructed, all consonants are obstructed. You have metallic words like N and G and MG. So just thinking about the combinations of the sounds and how these sounds can create meaning and emotion.
Ryan's answer makes me think about how those of us who might speak multiple languages recognize the ways that language feels, and there's like a somatic relationship to it. But from a craft level, recently, I've been returning to the unit of the sentence. I'm really interested in like ways tension arrives and expands, and what pacing of a like what pacing of a tension could do within a sentence itself. But then, in a like more broadly applied sense, one of my poetic practices is to write. I write collaboratively with another poet who lives in Tampa, Dr. Anne Barngrover at St. Leo. She and I have written. We will like do exquisite corpse style sonnets. So right now we're working on a series. So I think it's her turn. So we'll see our series unfolding. And a lot of that craft element is trusting what she's doing with a verb, or why she's leaving white space at the end of a line. Like what possibilities exist within this particular enjambment, and that play, just sort of that back and forth, facilitates a kind of, I have to be nimble in terms of my vocabulary, but also because there's something improvisational happening on the page, and I want to surprise Anne. She's like the smartest person I know. So if I get to write with the smartest person I know, then I need to bring my A game all the time, and it's hard. But sonnets are great for me. Like, they're the right kind of pressure that like let you think in a square, but then like not have to live in any sort of square whatsoever.
Thank you so much, folks. I really appreciate y'all being here. Audience members, thank you all so much for hanging out with us this evening. Please hang out, talk to our folks a little bit more, engage them, connect with them if they are willing. Don't leave anytime soon. It's always about the conversations that happen after the show. Thank you all so much for being here. Before we leave, I'm going to throw it back over to Susan, who's going to close us out for the night. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Sam, you are absolutely wonderful. Really appreciate you. Round of applause for Sam and all of our poets. Just such a fantastic evening. I'm just so honored to be in this room with you. I did not realize that this was the first time that an Asian American Pacific Islander group of poets has gotten together for a reading. So I feel very honored that we got to do that right here. In our Telly Levine Gallery in the Warehouse Arts District, and we are also reside on the Deuces Corridor. So thank you so much for all of you coming. I did want to just have a few short things to say. We have our if you're not a WADA member, consider becoming a WADA member so that you can we do these events every month. And I mentioned that earlier, so I'll stop at that. But as you can see around you, we have Art Heals 2023. We have done this show with this organization, Suncoast, for the last 3 years at least. I know this is at least the third show, could be the fourth. And it's very powerful, very, very powerful. So I hope you have a chance to get around and see everything. In May, we have another annual show that we brought back. It's called Puzzles, and they are ESE students from our Pinellas County Schools. And it is the second time that they are getting their own show in an official gallery. So we're really excited to have them back, something we want to collaborate with the Pinellas County School District and continue that work. So we do have our website that you can catch upcoming events. We have our social media. Please check all that out. We have a weekly newsletter. Second Saturday Art Walk. How many of you are familiar with Second Saturday Art Walk? A few hands. Ooh, okay, great. Captive audience. Every second Saturday in St. Pete, we have an art walk from 5 to 9. And when I say we, I'm talking about the 5 different art districts that are in St. Pete. You are currently in the Warehouse Arts District, and we are only one of the 5 districts. You can spend the whole night right here on this campus, and I encourage you to do so. We ignite the space out front. We have beautiful lights. We have vendors. We have vendors that go down the pavers. And like I mentioned earlier, all the galleries or the studios open up with the artists, and you're able to go into their studios. Every month, there's a show in the gallery here. We have a few other galleries on campus as well, and other groups of artists, first artist studios, like over in Softwater Studio, MGA, and so I really encourage you to come back. 7C is across the way. They are an amazing music venue. If you haven't been over there, they specialize in guitars. They always have live music. We have live music a lot of times.
And it's just a really fun space to come back to. So I really encourage you to come back. The next art walk is May 13th. So come back and visit us. Come back and visit me. My studio's around the corner too, and so is Sumitra's. Sumitra's is, there's like kind of like around this corner, down the hall to the left, first floor. There's studios upstairs too. So yes, I encourage you to come back. I do want to quickly introduce you to our brand new staff member for WADA. His name is Cody. We have Cody Wussart. And Cody is our events coordinator. So I'm going to pass it up to him just to get him warmed up to how this goes and just to talk about a few events that we have coming up.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Susan. And let's give it up for these poets one more time, y'all. So we definitely have some fun things planned for the Warehouse Arts District Association. As you've seen outside, we have a newly constructed theater that entitles our stage. We have a 23-foot cinema screen across that and a professional sound system. We're launching that event with our event Friday. So Friday, we are going to be premiering the Sunscreen Film Festival's movie Lift. Now, Lift follows Steven Melendez and his struggles. Now, that is going to be a two-part event where we will have a screening and a panel discussion afterwards. Sunday, we will also have our International Jazz Day coming to the stage. International Jazz Day is going to be a two-part event too, so get ready. It's going to feature the Brazilian jazz ensemble, Osam Do Jazz. That is going to be going down at 7 o'clock, followed by the feature premiere of the U.S. premiere of Mexican film Sincopa. Sincopa is going to be a very fun film. The directors, the whole cast is going to be here for a Q&A afterwards, so make sure you guys come on by. Again, tickets are available online for both of these screenings, so if you go to our website at the Warehouse Arts District, you can get to the ticketing links, also with our Facebook event links. Now, we are going to keep the conversation going on that main stage, so just after our art walk on Saturday, May 13th, May 14th, we are going to have the Instrument of Hope here at the Warehouse Arts District. The Instrument of Hope was made from spent bullet casings from the Parkland shooting, and we are going to have renowned artist Bria Schoenfield playing that instrument for everybody there. It's again going to be a two-part event. We're going to have a panel discussion afterwards, so I invite everybody out. Check it on out. Again, come on back, y'all. We're going to have some fun things going down here. Again, one more round for these poets. And give us a round for Susan for putting this event together, y'all.